Blog Talk Radio.
Going into the corner, Gordie Howe goes in to fight for it. He and Zygenkov have it. Back to Walt, not in front. Here's Bobby Hull, shoots good! Bobby Hull!
Junot trying to make a play. Lemieux steals, and he's up against Raymond Bork and Adam Oates. Coming to the Bruins, they got around both men. Cutting for the net, he's in on goal. Hey! Charlton scores! What a goal!
Brune carries in, rolling in front of him, and in a shot! Desjardins following the play, and he misses the short shot. Here he is again! Scores!
Hockey fans, you're listening to the hard-checking, kick-saving, sudden-death scoring NHL breakdown. I'm your host, Scott Levy, joined as always by George Kurtz of RotoExperts.com. We'll bring you all the on- and off-ice action, as well as keeping you fans and you fantasy owners fully informed of the top of your respective leagues with our fantasy reports, including the IR, line updates, goalie report, and waiver wire recommendations. Today is, of course, Monday, November 26th, just a couple of games away from the one-third point of the season. 27 games is one-third of 81, pretty much as close as you can get to an exact one-third. And as I teased on our last show, once we reach this point, George and I sort of start getting our stats and our opinions and everything together, and we eventually make our team power rankings. Now, this is sort of like the team power rankings that you see a lot of websites that are sort of like a current from week to week. This is more of an overall. And of course, there's going to be some fluidity to it. I'm not saying that these are rock solid and will never change. But these are more of an overall, this is what we think and expect for the season based on what we've got, based on what we're thinking we're going to get. So in the next couple of weeks, we'll be rolling that out. But a lot to talk about today and not much time to do it. Flyers, just a few hours ago, relieving Ron Hextall of his GM duties. So a GM gets the axe instead of a coach for a change. As we know, coach is usually the first person to go. Also want to talk about the Buffalo Sabres with George, 9-game winning streak. Are they the real deal? Are we buying in? Again, we've got a pretty good chunk of the season. Buffalo specifically played 24 games. You know, that's about 30% of your season right now. So it's not like, you know, just one fly-by-night thing. Or is it? So we'll talk about that with George as we continue sort of, you know, going through some of the teams that have been surprisingly good to start the season and maybe some of the teams that have been meh that we thought were going to be a little bit better. And then, of course, we'll wrap it up with the fantasy reports. But, George, let's start with the Philadelphia Flyers. It's for no other reason than you're an Islander fan and I'm a Ranger fan, and Flyer pain is always very satisfying. I'm a terrible person. Anyway, I do have a little bit of a cold, so I'll try not to sniffle or cough too much in your ear. But, George, when you look at this move for the Philadelphia Flyers, now we've sort of been talking and a little buzzing around the Flyers for weeks, not necessarily speculating about a firing of the coach or the GM, although the words have been out there in the wind, out in the ether, so to speak, you know, so I don't know if this is so much shocking, but are you a little surprised that the GM gets it before the coach gets it? And do you think this is sort of a move that makes sense, even if it's just a, okay, I like Hextall, he did a good job, but this team needs to be shocked into, you know, sort of playing better, even if it's just that reason? Does this move make sense to you? So Philadelphia Flyers, George, do you like it? Do you hate it? What do you think?
Let me tell you a little story. I'm at the gym when I heard this news. It came across on my phone. So we all know phones, small, hard to read the print here. And maybe because it was just assumption, I assumed it was the coach. The names sound look-alike, sound alike. So I assumed it was the coach. And I'm going through my head, I'm like, this is nuts. This is not that I'm a big fan of the coach. I'm not, but I mean, Elliott, Neuwirth, Lyon, Stalock, Picard. Those are your goaltenders. And it's been like this for years now. And you know how I feel, Scott. You cannot win in today's NHL without solid goaltending. And what kept going through my head, this is all about this year after I heard the news. I'm like, this is not the coach's fault. This is the GM's fault. You didn't update the goaltending. You knew about this problem year after year after year after year, and you did not upgrade the goaltending. So I could go through my head, same thing over and over again. I'm not a big fan of the coach, but it was the GM's fault here. The GM had to redo this. I'm saying coach and GM so I don't mess up the names. I'll just mess up the English language instead. So I just kept going through my head. So it took me a few minutes, and I started reading more. So I'm like, oh, they did fire the GM. I'm like, oh, that makes much more sense now. Because you're absolutely correct. Generally, it's the coach that goes first, then the GM. You know, that's how these things usually work here. But in this case, it has nothing to do with hating the Philadelphia Flyers, by the way. I'm an Islander fan, right? I have a hard time hating the Rangers now. The Islanders have their own issues, or had their own issues with Snow and the joke of Wong and all that. So I don't blame anybody else for our problems with the Islanders. It's got nothing to do with hatred against Philadelphia. But, I think Hextall had to go. I do. I think this is on him. He had done some good things. He got them out of salary cap hell. Yeah, he did, but he didn't fix the goaltending. Really, the defense is better, but hardly rock solid. So this is one case where I think they got it right. Usually, a lot of times I feel like the GM should go too, along with the coach, but they get rid of the coach first, give the GM another shot. In this case, I think they got it right. But that being said, don't kid yourself. The coach is not going to be all that far behind, because whenever GM comes in, the Flyers aren't going to hire some baby-faced GM. They're going to hire somebody with substance. He's going to want his own coach.
Yeah, that's the thing. I don't know if this necessarily means we're done. Now, I've generally been, pretty supportive of Hextall since he's gotten to Philadelphia. I think overall he has done a very good job, especially with that ownership group and the senior management above him, who have always sort of had the philosophy of, let's fire people, let's trade people, at the drop of a hat. You know, don't forget, Paul Holmgren is still his senior, and we know how Holmgren was as a GM. If it could be traded, it would be traded. And if you didn't start producing within 5 or 10 minutes, you are on the block to be traded. So I actually thought, for the most part, over the last few years, that Hextall was the perfect sort of ailment for this organization to get them out of their impatience and get them to salary cap hell, which George, you already mentioned, and we know that they're finally sort of above and beyond, and his patience, which again, not a usual trait historically speaking for the Philadelphia Flyer organization, sort of was really determined to be patient, particularly with that defense, which is starting to show fruit. As you said, George, not a great defense, but if you compare them to how they were 4 years ago, we're talking night and day, in terms of the improvement here, So I'm a little bit conflicted here, George, only because I think you're right. At the end of the day, it sort of comes to the goaltending. I mean, you can make an argument about the coach, but I'm sort of like in a similar, area of the view. I'm not campaigning to fire him at all, but I'm not, also not like a huge fan. But I think there's been outside forces that have affected him in a negative way, specifically the goaltending. Now, again, I could sort of spin this two ways in terms of goaltending and Hextall not addressing it, because you're right, at the end of the day, he didn't address it. And that's probably the bottom line. But for the expense that he'd probably have to pay, even though you so correctly point out that generally speaking, trading for goaltenders, it's not the expense that you normally think it would be. But if other teams know that you're desperate for something, they are going to upcharge you on it. And so between that, but maybe even more importantly, George, there really hasn't been a whole ton of really good targets. The target that you say, okay, if I trade that guy and trade those first-round picks or multiple first-round picks or top draft choices, this guy's going to be in my net for the next 5, 6, maybe 10 years. There's sort of like some nice flyers out there like Grubauer, but was Washington really going to trade the Philly anyway? There really haven't been too many situations where you're like, wow, you've got a 1A, 1B situation where both these guys are clear starters and Philly should have targeted those. Now, I think all those points are reasonable and on point, but this is sports, and sports is big business, and winning championships is the business of sports. So at the end of the day, even though I think I bring up some good points, George, I think ultimately you're right that he just didn't get the goaltender that they so desperately needed, and that is what essentially what happened here. Paul Holmgren himself earlier today was quoted saying, simply, we're just not on the same page anymore, referring to Hextall. And it is believed what he meant by that was hirings and firings, specifically the rumors at least that upper management maybe wanted Hextall fired by now. Or making those trades, spending that ridiculous amount of capital that you have, whether it be prospects, players, or picks. So in this case, Hextall's conservatism in being a GM may have finally caught up with him. But I guess that's the one sort of thing that I'm interested to see how it plays out. To the last point that you made, George, the fact that you bring in a new GM, and a new GM is generally want to put their mark on the team. So if you were a betting man, George, I mean, now they haven't replaced Hextall with another GM. I'm sure it's going to be sooner rather than later, but it looks like it might be a couple of days, maybe a week or two, before that gets done. Would your expectation be wholesale changes, that you're going to see a coaching change sooner rather than later, that you're going to see some notable trades? Or do you think that whoever this GM is, despite the fact that they want to eventually put their mark on the team, that they're going to want to sort of wait and see and let things settle for a month or two before they consider making any changes at all? George?
Well, it can go in one of a number of different ways. Now, what you're sort of hinting is that, and that one of the reasons Hextall, the GM, was fired was because he wouldn't fire the coach. Now, if that's true, and the next GM does have someone of substance, he'll want to bring in his own coach. Then if I'm the coach now, you might want to put your house up for sale. Yeah, you won't be there long. So I don't think you'd make the rest of the season. There's a chance you could. There's a chance the GM that comes in knows the coach. I find that unlikely. He's a former college coach, but it could happen. And does want to see what it plays out. If they hire a GM that doesn't have much NHL experience, who doesn't have the kind of clout to say, I want to bring in my own guy, he could be with orders to keep the coach totally at the end of the season. I think that's unlikely. Because once again, I agree with you when you say that one of the reasons Hextall, the GM, might have been fired was because he wouldn't get rid of the coach. You know, he didn't want to make that move for whatever reasons. So that would seem to indicate that even the hierarchy wants the coach gone. And that'll be the new GM's job to get rid of the coach once they find someone in place. What you're seeing now in the NHL with all these changes, coaching changes, now we got GM changes, it's a domino effect. And it becomes a race to see, especially if teams have someone in mind, and most teams do. They have a list of, GM candidates behind their GM, coaching candidates behind their current coach, and they're afraid that these other teams that are making these moves will get that guy first. And I think that's what plays a part in this as well here. Bottom line is this. It's Philadelphia. This is not, some backwater team here. This is the Philadelphia Flyers, the original six, blah, blah, blah. I can go on and on here. They're going to hire a GM of substance, a guy we've heard of. I've heard Dean Lombardi's name being thrown about, that he could be there. That GM's going to want his own coach. I said I would give it, if it's someone like Lombardi, someone who, and everyone knows the name, I'd say 90% he'll want his own coach. It's just a matter of when. Right away? Next season? Are they throwing away this year already? I wouldn't think they are. It's still early. So I think he'll want his own coach. If it's somebody of a name we don't know, well, then it could be, like you said, until the end of the season. Then they'll start fresh next year. But generally, I have a funny feeling that you mentioned Holmgren, where they fired Hextall. Now, either they're bringing on a GM of substance who they want to pick his own coach, or they already have two guys in mind. A GM not of substance, but they want to be GM, and they're going to tell a GM who to hire. They want him to hire this guy. Maybe they just want to make sure he's on board with that. And we've seen that as well. You think about all the baseball hires now. Like someone like Aaron Boone was hiring for the Yankees mainly because he's willing to work with the GM on sabermetrics, all the numbers. It could be the same situation here. They just want to make sure the GM and the coach that they want can work together. That wouldn't surprise me either. But if I was a betting man, Scott, I think it's going to be a GM we all know, and that GM will bring on his own coach.
It's hard to believe you make this sort of change, whether GM or coach, this early in the season, and you're not doing it specifically to save the season. Unless it's a situation like sort of like the Columbus Blue Jackets a few years ago when they hired Tortorella and they start off like 0-7, where you're kind of new, and then they were like 1-10 or something. You kind of knew that the season was lost, even though it was really that early. But it was just a cluster, So they decide to make the move to try and sort of salvage things and build towards the future. Outside of that, you're generally trying to save the season. So it's hard to imagine that there isn't going to be some changes. I'm not necessarily saying significant changes that you're going to see guys like Couturier or Giroux or Voracek or, like necessarily traded. Although, with a team that hasn't made the playoffs hasn't won a playoff round, I should say, since 2012, and has only made the playoffs twice in the last 5 years, they could be motivated, especially if Holmgren, and this is not any specific speculation on my part that I've heard anything, credible about, but, what if Holmgren decides to put himself as the interim GM for the rest of the season? That would worry me if I was the Philadelphia Flyers, just because I think he sort of had a reputation for sort of not going off hat cocks, but, trading way too much. And he just sort of worries me. So it sort of really depends on whether I think you're going to change a coach or change of players, depending on who the GM is. All right, folks, let's turn our attention to one of the pleasant surprises of the season. And, George, when we first started talking about the NHL season and the teams and what we expected right on the cusp of the start of the season, I believe we both had the Buffalo Sabres as an improving team that's not going to make the playoffs this year, but looks like it could be good enough now to at least sort of be a constant annoying threat to the good teams in the NHL. Be that team that sort of buzzes around the back end of the, you know, the playoff drive, the wild cards, but ultimately probably just miss it, you know, sort of fall somewhere around 10th or 11th in the conference overall by the end of the season. At least that's what I know me and you talked about, at least, you know, generally speaking. But it was generally thought of, I think, pretty far and wide that this was the attitude. And here we are 24 games into the season, and at least for 24 hours, the Buffalo Sabres were in first place in the Atlantic Division, now sitting in second place in the Atlantic Division, one point behind the Tampa Bay Lightning. And this is a division that has the aforementioned Lightning, the Toronto Maple Leafs, who are a pretty good team, and yes, Boston has some injury issues of a significant portion at the moment, but I think we all look at them as pretty good team as well, you know, so it's, I don't know if you can just brush it aside, I guess is what I'm saying, but when you look at the team, George, you know, is this all about the 9-game winning streak that's getting this team noticed, and that, you know, when this winning streak is over, you think they're going to roll back and sort of be that 500 team and what I described we expected a few minutes ago? Or are you seeing an actual blossoming that you think this team is not going to remain first or second in the division? I'm not speculating about that, but that they maybe could be in contention for third place or a wild card. Or like I said, are we just getting way too ahead of ourselves with that kind of talk? Buffalo Sabres, George, what do you think? How impressed or not impressed are you with them? George?
Well, I think you have to be impressed. I think it'd be kind of silly to say it, not impressed. Not too many people pick the Sabres to be where they are now. I understand it's early. You know, it's a little, what, as you said, it's about 30% of the season, give or take. They have played more games than anybody else in the conference. That being said, they're tied with a lot of teams for the most games, but they played more. So you can make an argument there. Jeff Skinner has been a fantastic addition. Carter Hutton has been a fantastic addition. They've stabilized two areas. The Sabres have a legitimate top line. They have a legitimate goalie. Not that Hutton's a number one. You know, he's not up there with the greats. You know, he's not Vasilevskiy or someone like that, but he's a good, solid goalie. He'll give you a good, solid performance game in, game out. Dollar, I mean, think of who they added. They had a number one D, a number one goalie, and a first-line player. That's going to improve a lot of teams. You know, Dolan, who's only going to get better, is having a nice rookie campaign, right? Number one overall pick. Jack Eichel. Skinner's looks like he's going to score 5,000 goals, and Hutton's going to give you a good performance in net. That, it's amazing what just a couple of players will do for you. You know, so I'm not, maybe we shouldn't be surprised. This is where I'm getting at. Maybe we shouldn't be surprised at where they are when you think about the additions here. Now, what I might worry about, long season in the NHL, injuries are going to happen. You know, do they have the depth to overcome these injuries? And that is definitely what will scare me the most about this team. I mean, obviously, if you take out Eichel, it's going to hurt. It would hurt anybody team. But, you know, Eichel, Skinner, there's not much scoring depth behind them. You know, Sheary's an okay player. Okposo really has done nothing since he left Tavares. Pominville has been blah for years. You know, you take out Dolan or Ristolainen, they're going to struggle on defense. Hutton, anybody would struggle without the number one goalie. But I do worry about depth over a long season once these injuries start to add up. And they will. Every team has to go through it, and you need to survive. But, like I said, I think they're in pretty good shape, Scott. I do. I like this team as it is. I like the team that's up and coming. They're in a tough division, too. When you think about it, Tampa Bay is one of the best teams in the league. Toronto is one of the best teams in the league. Boston is really sort of a similar team to Buffalo when you think about it. One-line team, not much scoring depth there. But they're a good team as well. So for them to be doing this damage, it's impressive. It's certainly impressive. You know, you can say anything different than that. They have won 9 in a row. Of course, they're not going to keep that up. And you do wonder, and I agree with you, I do wonder, okay, the rest of the season, now they have 500 teams now the rest of the season? I don't think so. I think they're better than that. But for them to get third place in this division, I mean, it's a division from hell. Like I said, with those top teams, I think they'll play for a wild card spot. You know, but in the end, I think they may have trouble struggling with Boston. But then again, Boston's got their own issues. You know, Boston, one-line team, they have suffered the injury. To Pierre Patrice Bergeron, another guy that survived that. Rask hasn't been all that great in net, paying better of late. So I just wonder, how does Buffalo survive when they have to go through what Boston's going through now, when they lose that top-line player, when somebody else that they rely on is not playing well? That, I think, would be a true measure of the Buffalo Sabres. But at the very least, I do think they compete for a playoff spot.
Yeah, that more or less sort of puts them in the same category, the same, you know, area that I have them. Obviously, the Eichel Skinner thing is working beyond belief and kind of sets your first line, whether you're having Reinhardt there or Pominville there. They've been successful with both of those players. You know, I mean, there is a little bit, not a lot. There's a little bit more of depth scoring than you implied, because you do have Pominville with 18 points. But honestly, even if Pominville stays on that top line, you know, which he had sort of a brief reunion before sort of being moved off it again. Do we think he's going to keep up 18 points in 24 games pace? You know, even and again, that's even if he is on the first line. I have a hard time sort of seeing it, you know. But you also have, you know, a Reinhardt who has not been all that great in terms of actually production. He's actually played well and he's gotten good opportunities, but he's not necessarily converting. 16 points in 24 games isn't too bad. Then you have both of your young up-and-coming defensemen, Ristolainen and Dahlin, with 13 points each. Pozo, who you're right, has been messed since he left, Tavares, but, you know, he's solid in that top six. I mean, yes, you need and want more production from what he's given you. So I guess the biggest positive I could sort of say here in terms of thinking that they can keep this going is that the fact that the second line hasn't quite meshed yet. Now, obviously, there's no guarantee that it will. Part of this whole first 24 games of the season has been part of it, has been about finding players to play with Mittelstadt, and that hasn't quite worked yet. So if that does work itself out, and that's a big if, you know, and this is sort of the more speculative talk here, but if he could sort of get comfortable and sort of develop over the season, then you sort of got maybe a little bit of a secondary scoring, you know, with Okposo and Shearer on that second line with Mittelstadt. Obviously, we have to wait and see if that develops, you know. But, you know, having all that, and then I think one big thing that people might be overlooking a little bit here is the fact that there was a lot made last year about Phil Housley coming in as first-time coach, and the fact that his system was reportedly a little bit more difficult to pick up. Plus, you had a very young roster, and I remember talking to you around midway, you know, point of last season, saying how there were a lot of reports coming out of Buffalo that they're still having trouble figuring out, you know, Phil Housley's system. So now you sort of had it for a year plus. You're obviously playing it better. You have the turnover and the stability on the team, and suddenly you got a pretty nice product here. So George, I do think that it's going to be sort of split to what you just said now in terms of competing for a wild card spot, and what we said, that I think they're going to be more solidly floating between that sort of maybe 7 and 10 range in the overall conference, would again put them in play for a potential wild card. Because I agree with you, I don't expect them to be dramatically above 500 the rest of the way after the winning streak ends eventually. But I do expect them to be at least a little bit above 500 and combine that with this winning streak. And that should sort of keep you in contention, keep you in the realm. All right, folks, let's turn our attention to the fantasy reports. As always, starting off with the IR Lions report, which actually isn't too bad today. Starting in Anaheim, sort of switching things around, as obviously you would expect they would do, considering all the injuries that they have. But Silverberg moved off the line with Kessler, and Cagliano moved up to the top line with Getzlaff and Silverberg. And obviously, you're moving up top line, that's always an upgrade. But I think this is particularly good for Silverberg, because although he's generally played well for the last 3 years with Cagliano and Kessler, he hasn't maximized his offense when he's been with those two. And that was when those two were both younger, healthier, and more offensively productive themselves. So I kind of like this in terms of fantasy potential, assuming it's 6, which we obviously don't know yet. This does move Casse back down to the second line with Henrique and Rissi. And, you know, Casse, who I had recommended as a guy to potentially pick up, you know, in recent shows, just going to mention, seems like he's sort of coming around now. He's played 7 games overall. Got 3 goals in the last 4 games, only 11% owned on average in ESPN and Yahoo. So somebody at least put your watch on your watch list. In deeper leagues, you might want to take a flyer, especially if you are looking for wingers. In Arizona, man, the Chicago-Arizona trade pipeline. George, is this something I want to get your opinion on? In case you missed it, because it was a little bit quiet, or at least I thought it was a little bit quiet. Not a major trade. There aren't stars moving here. But the Chicago's Blackhawks move up-and-coming center, who they seemingly had a lot of excitement and faith for at the beginning of last year. Nick Schmaltz moved to Arizona for Strome and for Perlini, both of those guys also first-round picks. Strome's obviously been a disappointment. Perlini had a pretty nice second season with 17 goals on a pretty bad Arizona team last year. For reference in case you're not familiar with them. George, I wouldn't call this necessarily an earth-shattering trade, but I'm kind of curious what you think about it. Is this kind of thing that, it works, you see why they did it, or is this kind of thing of like, okay, you've got two middling teams that are just shuffling players around that are trying to make something happen? So what do you think about this deal, Chicago and Arizona? George?
Well, it was an interesting deal. I certainly wouldn't call it a big deal. Strom, the other Strom, his brother got traded a couple of weeks ago. I think what it comes down to is they want to see Strom play with DeBrincat, see if they reunite the chemistry they had in the OHL. See, that's part of it there. No money was exchanged here, so it was a straight deal. Both teams eating the salary cap. And I do think it's part of what you said. Just a little bit shuffling the deck, move some players around. Both teams are struggling. See if the additions work here. I probably like this trade a little bit more for Chicago. It's a little bit more. I think Strom has some more upside there, but I think it makes sense for both teams. I do. I mean, we say this over and over again. Sometimes players just need a change of scenery. You just need to, it's not working. Maybe the system's not working. Whatever. It could be a million reasons. It's just not working. And do something. At least when you, I think as far as the GM is concerned, you feel when you do something, well, you're doing something. Rather than just doing nothing, same old, nothing's changing. You're just dying. You're dying a slow death. It's like when you play fantasy, hockey, football, baseball, whatever it is. You do nothing at the trade deadline. Your team still sucks. I'd rather go down fighting, make some trades, make some moves, and know at least I tried. If it still didn't work out, hey, it didn't work out. It doesn't work out. If Schmaltz doesn't get any better with Arizona, well, you tried. Strong doesn't work any better with Chicago, you tried. You tried something. I'd always rather try something than nothing here. So I kind of like the move for both sides. I don't think it's a major deal, mind you. I don't think it's going to be earth-shattering as far as the NHL is concerned. But I do appreciate what both the teams did here. In the end, it's players. Now, maybe you don't. Most, casual hockey fans probably don't know these names. It's you and I do. We've talked about these guys a number of times. Anybody else in the industry certainly does. But it's not going to be an age you're rushing to go out and claim in anything but the deepest of deep hockey leagues. But still, it's these guys were all top prospects at one point. Maybe the change of scenery will help.
Yeah, I think that puts it in pretty good perspective. I mean, I think it's certainly a possibility that one or more than one of these guys finally break out and sort of fulfill more of the potential that we expected of them. But it makes sense for both teams. I do think Nick Schmaltz has a little bit more upside, and that's partly based on Strom's pretty notable disappointment about being able to sort of make and stay on the team and play top 6 minutes, which really has not happened at all in Arizona, except when they initially gave it to him, didn't deserve it, and then he'd get dropped in the lineup or taken out of the lineup, altogether, the Coyotes have good young extra forwards to spare, so you're getting what I think is probably the higher upside guy coming to you. You've got extra players to spare. For Chicago's point side of things, they need more reinforcements of good quality young NHLers in the bottom half of their lineup, and it's particularly some that might have potential to develop into the top half of their lineup, and obviously they're devoid of that. So for all the reasons you said and for those reasons, I think this trade makes a lot of sense. It's just, as you also said, probably not going to be that earth-shattering. I don't think anybody's going to be running out and picking up any of these guys. Sure, in a half a dozen games, Dylan Strome sort of does get put together with DeBrincat, and I think you're probably right about that. Then we'll see if they can sort of, find that same chemistry that they used to have. It's been reported that the big thing with Chicago, and they finally lost patience with Schmaltz, is that they were just getting a little sick and tired of his hesitance. You've got the talent, go out there and do it. Don't be so hesitant. He hasn't quite sort of cracked that yet. So maybe the move to a new team, will shock him into more focus. And that kind of thing, a trade, I think that kind of attitude, again, speculating that I'm right about that, a trade is usually the kind of thing that will tend to be more effective in kicking a player higher into focus. So I am still keeping an eye on Schmaltz. But, yeah, ultimately it's not that big of a trade in terms of the impact on the ice or for fantasy owners. In Boston, McAvoy with that cushion. No official new news here, but it's still believed they're hoping, and I stress the word hoping, since he did start skating on Friday and has continued skating, that they're hoping that at the end of this week he will come back from his concussion. I would not count on that. I think that is a best-case scenario kind of situation. But I also don't think we're looking at, you know, another full 2 weeks or 3 weeks before we see McAvoy. But it is concussion, so you never know. Even after this trade happened with the Chicago Blackhawks, looking at their lines today, they're changing things up and finally splitting up Patrick Kane and Jonathan Toews. Hayden moved up in practice today to that top line with Toews and Sade. And your second line is Anisimov, DeBrincat, and Patrick Kane. But once again, for all the reasons that we just said because of this trade, don't be surprised if they got shuffled up sooner rather than later, although for the first game or two coming out after this trade, I wouldn't be surprised if we do see these lines that I just told you about. In Edmonton, Spooner moved up to the top line, at least their last game, to play with McDavid and Drysdale. And pay attention, or at least expect a Ken Hitchcock effect when it comes to the best players, at least with them playing together. Hitchcock does have a history of liking to stack his best players. First thing he did last year when he got to Dallas was put Radulov with Seguin and Jamie Benn when everybody was sort of speculating that those three wouldn't play together, sort of spread out the offense. Point here is expect him to keep Drysdale and David together, which I think would be sort of quite a boon and make a lot of fantasy owners quite happy. Out there in fantasy land. In Florida, Malkin with an upper body injury is on list as day-to-day, so Vetrano takes his place on the second line with Bustad and Huberdeau. In L.A., Clifford taking Kovalchuk's spot on the second line with Carter and Toffoli the last few games. So not only is there that, but there's Kovalchuk, not moved up to the top line, not moved down to the third line, moved down to the fourth line and getting less and less ice time. Last four games, 12 minutes, at 47 seconds, then 15 minutes, then 13 and a half minutes, then 6:20 in their last game. He had been averaging 15-16 minutes game up until this point. So keep an eye on that. He might become now an outright drop for fantasy owners, particularly in shallow leagues, but even deeper leagues, if that continues, I don't know why you'd want to keep him on your roster. Hadlin just acquired from the Pittsburgh Penguins, MCL sprain, lands him on the IR. He is a week-to-week. Little note just for fantasy owners who might own Niederreiter from the Minnesota Wild. He is just 26% owned, but in the last two games, he himself has been playing on the fourth line as well, making him very droppable. And Dumba left practice early today. Now, it was speculated by Boudreau that he believes he is probably okay, but he also admitted, I haven't gotten an update yet. So this is really more of a heads up, you know, especially if you are in daily lineup leagues. In particular, keep an eye on that. If you have another defenseman you can slip into your lineup for the next game, you might need to do that. And obviously, if you are in weekly leagues, that leaves you in a little bit of a conundrum unless I or yourself find an update between now and the start of your lineup for the week. In Montreal, it has not been officially confirmed, and it hasn't been denied either, that Shea Weber, I've been talking about for the last couple of shows, looks like he's probably coming back tomorrow for the Montreal Canadiens. He was playing in line rushes today. They did put Alsner on waivers, and I believe he's expected to clear waivers at his salary with his lack of production. I think we could sort of expect that for the Montreal Canadiens. So, George, quick question. When it comes to Shea Weber, I know generally speaking, you don't like to put players coming back from injury right back into the lineup. But isn't there an exception to that rule when you're talking about superstar players, top 10 at their position? So if Shea Weber is coming back tomorrow, are you sticking him in your lineup if he's on your team? Or are you taking your more conservative approach of, okay, let him play two or three games or a week, and then I'll decide when I want to reinsert him in the lineup? So, George, Shea Weber, what do you think? Play him or don't?
Well, I guess the smart ass of me wants to say, what superstar player is coming back tomorrow? I don't see a superstar player coming back tomorrow. All right, he hasn't played in years. I mean, a new team. He was a superstar with Nashville. He was a superstar at Montreal. You know, and now he's come back from a long, and we're talking long, long-term injury here. So I don't know what anybody's expecting. That being said, he's a defenseman. You know, you start four. You know, this is not putting a goaltender in. You know, I think I look at it like this. How could he possibly hurt your team? Your worst-case scenario is that you're starting him over your fourth defenseman. And let's face it, in most leagues, now there can be some people who obviously have better defensemen, but in most leagues, your fourth defenseman is a nobody. Yeah, a guy really just probably a place filler. And maybe even a category filler. He's a one-category guy. It's what I use sometimes for my defenseman. Maybe a plus-minus guy. Time-on-ice guy. Whatever categories you have that you need to fill. He's that kind of guy. So will it bother me to start Weber? No, it won't. I think it's different than starting a goaltender who could just, you know, train wreck, especially in head-to-head leagues, train wreck you, your categories for 1 week. Or even off top forward, you need to score goals and he's going to struggle and it's plus minus, minus seven. That might be something I would worry about, whether that is plus minus could hurt, but not enough where I'm not putting him in. But what I'm trying to say is that he's not an automatic put in either. Now, he's not a superstar anymore. No one really knows what kind of player he'll be. He was so-so when he went to Montreal in the first place. And as soon as he's going to go back and be that player he was several years ago, I think that's kind of silly. You know, he's 33 years old now. He's getting up there. But like I said, I really don't have a problem with it. You know, once again, he's starting over your fourth defenseman. I would think in most cases, just blind, people just ask me, blind case, should I start Weber or this guy? Weber or this guy? I'd be like Weber almost every time. There'll be some occasions where I know I'd be the other guy because someone does have a strong defensive core. But in most cases, I imagine, in this case, because he's a defenseman, and a guy you'd be starting over your fourth day, I can't say that enough, you're probably okay. But I wouldn't expect miracles. That's really the bottom line here. But I wouldn't rail against it either.
No, yeah, I certainly wouldn't expect like a 50, 60-point pace from Shea Weber the rest of the way. But he did have 17 goals, 12 of those on the power play, and 42 points 2 years ago, his first year in Montreal, and had 16 points in 26 games, which is a 48-point pace last year, which still put him in a pretty good defenseman. Now, to the point that you made, he's been out a long time, and it was a major injury at his the age that he is. So to sit here and actually expect him to sort of put up those same numbers, it'd probably be a little bit naive, but I think he's still comfortably a top 20 defenseman, even if you don't consider him a top 10 defenseman. I think he still has that potential. You know, I just wouldn't expect it, as you said, for all the points that you made, George. All right, let's turn our attention back to the IR lines report in Nashville. Injuries starting to pile up there, at least their top six, as Turris, with an undisclosed injury, lands on the IR. He's going to be out at least a week. But, you know, from the whispers I'm hearing, I don't think it's going to be a whole lot longer than that, but I think it's going to be closer to a week and a half, 2 weeks before he gets back in the lineup while he is out. Austin Watson gets an opportunity on the top line with Johansson and Forsberg. And what does he do? Scores a hat trick. Not too bad. Makes you wonder, especially with the injuries that they have, is whether they're going to keep him up there. Kind of hard. Have a hard time seeing Laviolette plucking him right off that line. Not saying that he's necessarily going to cement that spot after just that spot after one good game, but I think it is likely that Laviolette will at least give him a couple games, which at least makes him an option for an interesting pickup for this week to see if he could fill a hole for you if you need a winger. And on the second line, you got Yarncroft centering Fiala and Craig Smith. For the New York Islanders, Bouvillier moves back up to the top line with Barzal and Bailey, with Lee moving back down to the second line with Nielsen and with Eberle and all those fantasy owners that picked up Kunako. Unfortunately, he's now on the third line. I know you're all devastated that 0.5% of you that picked him up. In Ottawa, Mark Stone hit in the face, had to leave Saturday's game early, but already listed as good to go for Monday. He will be playing with a facial shield, but he'll be back on that second line playing with Colin White, who is also going to be returning after missing one game, and the two of them will be playing with Brady Tkachuk on that second line. In Pittsburgh, Corey Kvitsik, a concussion out indefinitely. Officially says day-to-day, at least for the moment, but I do expect him to be put on the IR in the next couple of days, and Dominic Simon takes his space on the top line with Crosby and Gonzalez. Shifting up the lines a little bit in Tampa Bay as Gord moves up to the top line with Stamkos and Miller shifting over to the right wing side on that line. And your second line is Point, centering Tyler Johnson on the left side and Kucherov on the right. Which brings us to the Toronto Maple Leafs that could have some major changes this week. As we told you on Friday, Matthews didn't participate in the morning skate with the lineup in the lines today, but that was sort of expected. You know, I told you on Friday they wanted to have at least one practice, a good hard physical practice with that injured shoulder before they put it in. Now, that practice is expected to be tomorrow, and he's as long as there's no setbacks or issues with that, he's expected to be returning within a game or two after that. I would expect the very next game. You know, but we obviously have to wait and see if he has no issues with that practice more. So Austin Matthews should be coming back into lineup too. And just because December 1st deadline is coming up, it brings me back to William Nylander, George, who I also want to ask you about. You have that December 1st deadline. It's a week away. But also on top of that, you have the rumors and the speculation And I stress that it's rumors and speculation, but we are hearing it from some pretty prominent names out there that a Nylander-Toronto Maple Leafs contract signing is close and could happen sometime soon in the next couple of days. Take that for what it means. It could be accurate, or it could be just pundits and people like George and I doing podcasts needing something to talk about. But George, let's assume this happens for a second. And he comes back to the Toronto Maple Leafs. Assuming he's on your waiver wire and you go and you pluck him up, or you've been stashing him on your fantasy waiver wire, or you're just your fantasy team all season, or you've traded for him recently, whatever the case may be, is he a guy that you're also constantly sticking right back into the lineup? Assuming he comes back three or four games from now, that fifth game, are you putting him right back in there? Because I'm wondering how it's going to play out here, assuming he signs and comes back. Because for one thing, Kapanen's been pretty good taking his spot in the top six. 10 goals, 17 points, you know, that's in 24 games, and he wasn't even in that top six for all those 24 games. It took 4 to 6 games before he had that opportunity. You know, so he's been doing pretty darn good up there. Plus, Babcock isn't the kind of coach who generally just gives players things. They have to earn it. So I'm wondering what you think about the situation. Again, assuming Nylander comes back, how excited are you to get him right back in your lineup, or do you think it's going to be more of the waiting game that you're going to have to wait and be patient for another couple of weeks before he even becomes a reality to put in your lineup to see where he falls? George, Nylander, how would you navigate it?
It'll be interesting. It'll certainly be interesting. First of all, the rumors you're talking about were mainly debunked. All right, the rumors from last Friday that was closed, those are pretty much debunked. If something was going to happen from that, it would have happened already. I think what it comes down to is which it does in all negotiations. Which side blinks first? You know, and I think that's what's going to happen here. Will it be Toronto when they trade him, or will it be Nylander takes a bridge contract, not for quite as much money as he wants? Does he take a chance of not playing this year? You know, that sort of thing here. We saw it in football, and that had to wake up some players. I'm sure hockey paid attention to it with Le'Veon Bell, that he actually did eat it and say, screw it, I'm not playing this year. I'll eat the $15 million, as stupid as that was. But he did that. I'm not saying Nylander is going to do that. So I don't know. No one knows. You don't really know what's in the heart of somebody, of how badly or how angry they are. It's unusual for a player to do that because no matter what, and like in Le'Veon Bell's case, no matter what he thinks, he can't make up that money. That $50 million is gone. You know, so silly for him to do that. You know, as much as it would be silly for Nylander to do that. But what could come down here is that Nylander maybe said, okay, I'll do a bridge, but only for 2 years. And Toronto, of course, will want three. And there's another argument. So you have so many arguments going on here between Nylander and Toronto here. Now, if I'm Toronto, I go back to what you said. Man, Capitals look pretty good there. We have all these other guys, Tavares. You know, you got Matthews. You got guys who you know can score goals. Marner's playing great. Marner's going to need to get paid as well. Matthews needs to get paid. Doesn't it make sense to trade him and get what you don't have, a defenseman, or more than one defenseman? Young defenseman that you control the salary for a couple of years. I keep going through this over and over again. Because what's going to happen, let's say you do sign Kapanen to whatever deal you do, you're going to have the same problem now when you got to sign Matthews. And now you got to sign Marner. And you're going to go through this all over again. But you're going to alleviate some of that if you were to trade him and get what you want. It really be a win-win for everybody in my mind. I mean, everybody wins here. You know, you assume whichever team you trade them to would pay them. You know, right? And then you get what you need. Assuming it's more than just draft picks, you get a player that can help you now, a good young defenseman that can help you now, which is what this team needs to truly be a Stanley Cup contender. And it maybe alleviates some of the salary pressure, cap pressure, in the next season or two. Matthews, Marner. You know, because Toronto, I mean, when you signed Tavares, you knew this was coming. This is what's the bad management here. When you signed Tavares, everybody knew this was coming. You and I talked about this over the summer, that they were going to have problems now with other guys because they were going to have cap issues here. So how they didn't see this coming is beyond me. It's just beyond stupid in my mind. Did they just assume Nylander would sign the bridge contract and not have a problem? I mean, it's just silly. They keep pushing things off here like they're not going to come due. Sort of reminds me of the Cowboys and 49ers back in the 90s with the cap problems. They kept pushing the bill off until, hey, you couldn't push it off anymore and you couldn't field a team. So I think it makes sense to trade him, Scott. I do. But that being said, in the end, I think he's going to sign a bridge contract. I think it'll be for 2 years, whatever amount of money, $7 million a year, $6.9 million, whatever it might be. That's what I expect. It'll be that sort of thing. I think it's the wrong move, though. If I'm Toronto, I shouldn't say it's the wrong move. Assuming they can get the deal, a good solid deal for that, a good solid defenseman, a really good defenseman, not a good solid one, a really good defenseman, and maybe draft picks or whatever to make up the talent. They can't get a great one. I think this is the direction they should go. I think it alleviates a lot of their problems. And like I said, when you said with Kapanen, it's not like they're going to get any worse. They actually still will get better. So that's how I would like him to go. But in the end, I think they're going to sign a bridge deal. I don't think he's that's a double negative. I don't think he'll hold out the entire year and not sign anything. I either think he'll get traded or sign the bridge. But if I was to gamble, I'd say bridge. And as for starting him, well, I mean, fantasy-wise, are we talking, is he going to play on the first game on a Tuesday? Is it his weekend? If it's a weekend, no. I'll sit him. This way you can see him play for a game or two. Babcock could punish him for a little bit, make sure he's in shape. You know, I shouldn't say punish him, but, you know, game him into shape and play him on the third, fourth line until he feels he's ready to play on that top line. He certainly won't be in hockey speed, hockey shape there. So I think it might take a couple of games here. Best case world, Scott, I'd like to sit him a week in fantasy, best case. But like I just said with Weber, where Weber, you're probably starting because your fourth defenseman, you know, it's probably no better than he is, even if he's not the par here. I think it would depend on who you're sitting him for. I think you probably are deeper at forward than you are at defenseman. So I think with Weber is almost a start, I could see you not starting Nylander right away, but it'd be a case-by-case basis. He is a great player, but I'd be leaning towards sitting him, mainly because I don't think Babcock's going to automatically make him a top-six player. I think he's going to have to work himself into shape, into that player.
Yeah, I think that's exactly it. And I have a couple of responses to what you said, you know, because that's sort of my sense, too. You look at Babcock, he makes players earn it. And not even as we're punishing you for holding out, but for the reason that you just said. You haven't been playing hockey the last couple of months like we have, you know. So I sort of expect him to start on the third or even fourth line, right wing, and slowly work his way up. The only possible sort of fly in that ointment and that sort of idea is that, you know, Kapanen has been playing pretty well with Kadri, although he was playing better, even better, I should say, with Matthews. You know, so I'm just sort of wondering if Babcock will want to lean towards continuity. I still think that you're probably right, more than likely, that he's going to have to sort of work his way back in the lineup. You know, now, granted, assuming he signs, which I agree with you, that's more likely than not to happen. You know, I think even if he does start, you know, like on the third line or gets put on the third line, he's playing with Kadri, which isn't terrible, you know. But still, ultimately, I'd like to see him for a few games, because, like I said, I do anticipate this sort of slow build in getting him up to speed there. And, George, I have to say, despite the salary cap problems, because obviously they are, you know, notable and significant and legitimate issues, I was never on board with the idea of trading Nylander. And I probably still wasn't up until about 5-6 weeks ago when you saw Kapanen had been moved up to the top six for a good couple of weeks. So between then and now and his continued production, I think he's sort of proving what I said a couple times last year, that, man, I really want to not only see Kapanen on this team, but playing in the top nine, because I think he's legit. You know, so now that I feel like we've sort of got some proof or some confidence of that, well, now I feel even more confident that turning around and trading Nylander for the very reason that you said, because now you can feel that hole. Because before Kapanen approved itself, okay, yes, I got a nice top six, but like now that I know I still have a ridiculous top six with Kapanen showing that he could put up the production that Nylander put up. You know, so now I find it sort of an intriguing idea of trading him, whereas at the beginning of the season, I was like, nope, I want to re-sign him. Either way, I think you're also right that it's more than likely he gets re-signed for a bridge deal, although my prediction is going to be a three-year bridge deal rather than a two-year bridge deal, but that's just sort of splitting hairs. All right, let's finish up the IR and lines report. In Washington, Kuznetsov with a concussion and T.J. Oshie with their concussions, not on the road trip as we expected, and we told you on Friday with the Capitals. Now, it's a little bit tricky here. Now, Kuznetsov did skate today for the first time in 2 weeks since he had the concussion, so there's some hope that it's going to be sooner rather than later, still at least a week. I'm thinking a week to 10 days before we see Kuznetsov again. But it gets a little bit more complicated with Oshie because this is his fifth concussion, and he has not started skating yet. So keep that in mind when it comes to TJ Oshie. You might be missing these guys for at least another 3, 5, 7 games before they realistically get back in the lineup. All right, folks, there's your IR Lines report. Let's turn our attention to George, and we're running a little bit long, so let's jump right in here with George. What's the big news, if any, when it comes to goaltenders around the NHL, George?
Yeah, it's a nicer goalie report, certainly, than Friday. Minnesota, Dubnyk returns. He was out a game or two with an illness, but he's back. Halak's going to start tonight for Boston. Luongo's one of our injuries here. They're calling it day-to-day. It's a reoccurrence of the knee injury that kept him out for about a month when his own teammate fell on him. He's day-to-day. All right, Hutchinson was called up. Reim is going to start tonight. And really, you'll wait and see here. This is another team, Scott, that I wonder. Good team. They're struggling off the slow start again. I think I wonder if that's because Luongo's been out, off and on, out last year, the year before he was hurt. Should you have done something in goal here? You know, and I know Luongo's a Hall of Fame, a great goalie, and we all love him. He's great on Twitter. He's a funny guy. But I wonder in the end, you know, can you win with him consistently? Probably not. Can't stay healthy at this point in his career. The Devils, Kincaid starts tonight over Schneider. No shock there. Arizona, you might have saw that we called Aiden Hill. That's because Darcy Kemper has a lower body injury, not Antaranta. He didn't get re-injured or anything like that. Antaranta's fine. He just plays on a bad team. But Aiden Hill was recalled. Darcy Kemper has a lower body injury, so you're okay there. Philadelphia, I went over it earlier. They're just a disaster. Elliott's out for at least another week to 10 days. Same thing with Mikhail Nuverv. Now Lyon has a lower body injury. He's day-to-day. They've recalled Anthony Stolarz. So it's a mess. It's just a mess. Picard and Stolarz there. They also only have two games this week. And you wonder if that's played part of this firing, by the way, of Hexall, to get things sort of settled in just a two-game week. Carolina, Mrazek is back. He's healthy. He backed up McElhenney or Darling over the weekend. So, once again, they got a three-goalie nightmare there, Mrazek, Darling, and McElhenney. I still think one has to go eventually, but they don't seem to be in any rush to do anything. Kings, Quick has started the skate, practice with the team. He could be back as soon as the next road trip for the Kings. So you're going to get back Jonathan Quick. It looks like within the next 7-10 days, 2 weeks at most here. So Jonathan Quick should be ready to return to the lineup. Bishop was placed on IR, no shock. The counting move was they needed to activate Devin Shore. They needed the roster spot there. Bishop is still not supposed to be out long-term. Chance he could come back this weekend as early as that. So there you go. Greece starts for the Islanders tonight. And that's it as far as injuries. Like I said, a better report as far as, Friday was a nightmare. This one outside of, Luongo's annoying, but we knew that already. You're okay here. It seems like it's more of an update on what's going on than any new injuries.
Well, compared to some of the goalie reports we've been getting for a couple of weeks now, I think most fans of fantasy owners would certainly take this any day of the week. All right, George, you know my follow-up question is for recommendations for the week for fantasy goaltenders. We got 10 teams with 4 games weeks, which usually presents some opportunities for some of those backup goaltenders to get some decent starts. So what backup goaltenders or low on number one goaltenders do you like this week if you need to stream a goaltender for fantasy?
Yeah, you mentioned 10 teams have 4 games this week, so it's a nice slate. Anaheim's one of those teams. They're not playing very well. But they are one of those teams. Their back-to-back is immediate, Tuesday and Wednesday. They play the Florida teams there. So I would expect Gibson gets the Tuesday start, and Miller gets the Wednesday start there against the Panthers. I'm not saying he's a good start there, but he's somebody you might want to look at. Chicago, we'll get a pass on. Colorado, we've said it before, Grubauer should already be claimed. He's more than just a backup. He plays on a semi-regular basis there. But if Grubauer is available, you certainly want to claim him. Detroit, no thank you. Florida, listen, you need a starting goaltender. You got to grab Reimer, right? I know Luongo's day-to-day, but I don't know if I expect him to play this week. I don't, and they play 4 games. So at minimum, even if things worked out great for Luongo, you're still getting 2 games out of James Reimer. We know he's starting versus Devils tonight, and they have a back-to-back Friday, Saturday, Buffalo, Tampa Bay. So Reimer is a good pickup there if you need somebody. L.A. Kings, no, I'm going to pass on Campbell. Rangers, thought about Georgia, if I did, but I think in the end, I think you can go in a different direction here. But if you are interested, we'll talk about it more on the Friday show as they're back up to Saturday, Sunday, Montreal and Winnipeg. My issue there is I'm afraid I'm going to get the Winnipeg start. Ottawa, no thank you. I barely want Craig Anderson. Matter of fact, I don't want Craig Anderson. San Jose, this is probably your top backup of the week because they have that weird schedule. They play 4 games, and they're both back-to-backs. They play back-to-back Tuesday, Wednesday, Buffalo, Toronto, and then back-to-back Saturday, Sunday, Ottawa, Montreal. So Aaron Dell, as far as a pure backup is concerned, is somebody you want to grab here. Winnipeg is the other team that has 4 games, but we're not going to the backup there. So I mentioned 2 games for Philadelphia, but you weren't starting their goaltender anyway. They're the only team that has 2 games this week. Backups you can grab, James Reimer, who, like I said, could start all week. You might get 3 to 4 games out of him. Ryan Miller, I think you have better options here. But if you don't, you're in a deeper league. He's someone you can look at. Grubauer, Rittich, Koskinen, these guys should already be on your team. If they're not, if they're available, these are by far the number one guys. They're quasi number ones for their NHL team. So like I said, Grubauer, Rittich, Koskinen, by far guys you want to get. And as far as pure backups, as far as a low-owned goalie who's not starting, Aaron Dell, I expect him to play twice for the San Jose Sharks.
All right, George, great job as always helping us navigate the goalie situation for fantasy. I'll let you go as I wrap things up with the skater recommendations, and we'll talk to you on Friday's show. George already mentioned all those teams that have four games this week are the ones that jump out at me of being particularly intriguing. Winnipeg would certainly be the most playing Pittsburgh, Chicago, then New Jersey, and the Rangers. That is pretty intriguing, especially since they seem to be coming around pretty nicely as of late. Colorado as well, playing pretty well lately. They have a tough Nashville matchup to start the week, but then Pittsburgh, St. Louis, and Detroit is also kind of appealing. And then a couple of the teams that sort of find somewhat interesting, because if you're in a deeper league, I think there's some possibilities for pickups here. Standard leagues, probably not so much, but the New York Rangers and the Ottawa Senators, both playing four games this week, both middling teams, but having some offensive success lately. The Rangers, they're playing at home and home with each other to start off the week. So the Rangers have Ottawa, Montreal, and Winnipeg. Obviously, that Winnipeg game is pretty tough. Ottawa, Rangers, Philadelphia, then the Rangers again, and San Jose. So I think three of those four games, both those teams are pretty intriguing and hold some possibility if you're looking to stream some skaters. As far as the teams that have the standing three games this week, the schedule's popped out to me as particularly good. Boston playing Toronto, the Islanders, and Detroit, despite all their injuries, I still think I might take a chance on either, for Vaca Carlson as your top line guy, centering Pasternak and Marchand, or maybe somebody on the second line, again, depending on what the needs are. Also, Carolina playing Montreal, Anaheim, and L.A., all three of those teams, not exactly world beaters. So those are the teams I look at for the three games a week. In terms of specific player recommendations, probably my number one is for my number one team that I'm liking this week, which is Brian Little for the Winnipeg Jets. Center is only 11% owned on average in ESPN and Yahoo leagues, but in the last seven games, he's got one goal, eight assists, plus four, playing on that second line with Laine, who is exploding after such a slow start to the season, and Kyle Connor. And as I mentioned, they have that nice schedule this week, and even bleeding into next week, they got the Islanders as their first game next week, so you might get a nice five-game stretch out of him. For the New York Rangers, Chris Kreider, the left wing, is only 61% owned on average in ESPN and Yahoo leagues, really scraping the ceiling of ownership that we will recommend people. But in the last 10 games, six goals, five assists, plus three, four power play points, averaging over three shots per game, and that line with Kevin Hayes and Hedl has been playing pretty good lately, at least up until the weekend back-to-back games that they had. They were playing very good. All the line basically got shut out over the weekend, but I'm still pretty intrigued with them, especially with that schedule that they have this week as well. I recommended him about 10 days ago, but I see he's still widely available, still like his schedule, still like the player. Alex Tuch for the Vegas Golden Knights, the right wing's only 33%, excuse me, owned on average in ESPN and Yahoo leagues for the last 10 games, four goals, eight assists, plus four, three power play points. You got Chicago, Vancouver, and Edmonton all this week. It is all on the road, but I still kind of like that. And if you're looking to take some other longer shots this week, especially in deeper leagues, Alexander Kerfoot from Colorado Avalanche, center left wing eligible, at least in Yahoo leagues, 14% owned on average at ESPN and Yahoo. In the last 11 games, he's got three goals, nine assists, five power play points, playing on second line with Yost and Colin Wilson. And they've got that pretty decent schedule this week, as I already mentioned. And then finally, again, if you want to take a little bit of risk, because it was only one game, even though it was a hat trick, but I like the schedule this week, and I do think Laviolette's going to give him at least another couple of games before taking off the line to cost me a hat trick. Austin Watson, Nashville Predators left wing, right wing eligible player, only 7% owned on average in ESPN and Yahoo leagues, but in the six games since he has returned, four goals, two assists, seven penalty minutes, a power play goal, and on that top line playing Colorado, Arizona, and Chicago, all at home this week. All right, folks, that's all that we have for today. You guys have a good hockey week, and I'll try to get myself all better and stop sniffling in your ear on for Friday's show. Have a good hockey week, everybody. We'll talk to you on Friday.